All right, welcome to another deep dive with yours truly. This time we're going to try to untangle two things that people often kind of mix up, but super important. Anxiety and depression. You ever feel like these things are kind of like unwanted guests in your head? You know, they just overstay their welcome and make themselves too comfy. Well, we're going to take a closer look at them in this deep dive, try to figure out what makes them tick, you know, and how we can maybe, you know, show them the door. So our guide for this deep dive is a blog post with the super straightforward title of Understanding the Differences Between Anxiety and Depression, How Therapy Can Help. It's pretty simple, right? But I think as we get into it, things are going to get, you know, more complex and interesting. So maybe let's start with like a really basic question, but I think it's a great place to start is what exactly is anxiety? I mean, we all have stress, right? It's like part of life. But this blog post points out that for some of us, anxiety can become like way more persistent, more intense, something that like really starts to impact our lives. You know, have you ever felt so worried that you can't focus?
Or like your heart starts racing for no reason. Or maybe you just start sweating or your hands tremble. That's anxiety showing up in your body. And
yeah,
it can be pretty unsettling.
One thing that's interesting about anxiety is that it often comes from like thinking too much about the future. All those what if scenarios that start popping into your head can really trigger your body's fight or flight response, you know, even if the threat you're thinking about is like weeks, months, or even years away.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. It's like your body is getting ready for battle, even though the battle might only be happening in your mind. Okay, so what about depression? How is that different from anxiety? You know, that on-edge, heart-racing feeling. Well, in this blog post, they define depression as this feeling of sadness that doesn't go away, you know, and hopelessness and just like losing interest in the things you normally love doing. It's like a really heavy feeling, almost like there's this weight on you. And it makes it so hard to find the energy or motivation to like do anything.
And that heaviness can really impact everything, you know, not just your mood, but your sleep, your appetite, even if you can focus on anything. Depression can also make you want to be alone all the time, which makes it hard to connect with others or, you know, even find things you enjoy doing. It's like a vicious cycle, you know? You feel down, so you isolate yourself, but then that makes you feel even more isolated and depressed.
That's a really important point. I mean, it's not just feeling sad. It's like how that sadness creeps into like every part of your life.
Yeah.
One thing that really surprised me in this blog post was that anxiety and depression don't always happen separately. In fact, they often happen together, with one maybe making the other one worse.
Yeah, how anxiety and depression are related is complicated. They're often like intertwined, you know?
Yeah.
Think about it. Anxiety is often about fear and uncertainty about the future, right? But depression can stem from feeling hopeless about the present or the past. They're like two sides of the same coin in a way, both showing that you're having trouble finding some peace and balance emotionally.
So if you feel both anxious and depressed, it's like, you know, a double whammy.
Kind of, yeah. Like having two unwelcome guests who just, you know, keep bumping into each other and making things feel chaotic and overwhelming.
I love that analogy. It really helps me understand how those two things can, you know, interact.
Yeah.
And make each other worse. So with all this talk about how intense anxiety and depression can be and how they can even overlap, you know, you might be wondering if therapy can really help. This blog post really stresses how important therapy can be in helping people deal with both anxiety and depression. And while medication can be, you know, part of it, the author seems to suggest that therapy is like the key to actually feeling better long term.
That's really important to understand. You know, medication can definitely help manage the symptoms, but therapy gives you the tools and strategies to really understand like the root cause of these feelings, you know, and it helps you develop ways to cope that are actually healthy.
So it's not just about like hiding the symptoms, it's about fixing the underlying problems and learning how to like deal with those challenges in a better way.
Exactly. It's like learning how to speak the language of your emotions, you know. Therapy helps you connect how you think, how you feel, and how you act, and then figure out how to make changes that will make your life like more positive and fulfilling.
Okay, so therapy is like learning the language of your emotions. I love that. But there are so many different types of therapy. Like, how do you even know where to start? Well, this blog post mentions cognitive behavioral therapy, or CBT, as one of the most common and effective treatments for anxiety and depression. Can you explain what CBT is and like how it actually works?
Sure. So CBT is based on the idea that our thoughts, feelings, and actions are all connected, right? So if you change how you think about something, you can also change how you feel and act in response to that thing.
So it's not just about thinking positive thoughts. It's about challenging those,
you know, negative thought patterns that are making you anxious or depressed.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. It's about recognizing those automatic negative thoughts, you know, like, I'm not good enough, or everything is going wrong. You know, those thoughts that just pop into your head without you even realizing it. And CBT teaches you to question those thoughts, challenge them, and ultimately try to replace them with, like, more balanced and realistic thoughts.
So it's like, you know, training your brain to see things from a more balanced and realistic point of view. That sounds pretty empowering. But how does that work in, you know, real life? Like, what does a therapy session actually look like?
Well, in a CBT session, you work with the therapist to figure out what your negative thought patterns are, right? And you explore what situations or things tend to trigger those thoughts. Then you learn ways to challenge those thoughts, like looking at the evidence for and against those thoughts, considering other explanations, and developing ways to talk to yourself that are more helpful.
So it's like you and the therapist are working together, right?
Sure.
To understand how you think and figure out how to, like, shift those thoughts in a more positive direction.
Exactly. And it's not just talking. It's also about taking action. So with CBT, you often get homework assignments where you practice those new ways of thinking and coping with things in your day-to-day life.
So it's about taking what you learn in therapy and actually using it in the real world.
Yep, precisely. The goal is to give you the tools and strategies you need so you can manage your anxiety and depression even after therapy is over.
That's great. So it's about building up your skills and making yourself more resilient, so you can face challenges with more confidence and, like, a feeling of control. Now, this blog post also mentions a couple of other types of therapy that might be helpful for anxiety and depression: mindfulness-based therapy and interpersonal therapy. Can you quickly tell us what those are about?
Sure. So mindfulness-based therapy is all about learning to be aware of the present moment, you know? It's about learning to just observe your thoughts and feelings without judging them, to simply notice them as they come and go, like clouds moving across the sky.
So it's about being able to, like, step back from your thoughts and emotions and create a little bit of space between you and those, like, really intense feelings.
Exactly. And having that space can be really powerful. It lets you respond to those feelings more thoughtfully instead of just reacting automatically, you know?
And what about interpersonal therapy? What's special about that?
Interpersonal therapy, or IPT, focuses on how your relationships affect how you feel. You know, it's based on the idea that our relationships can both support us and stress us out, and that if we get better at communicating and building healthy relationships, it can really impact our mood and how we feel overall.
So it's about understanding that our emotions and relationships are connected, and that strengthening those connections can be good for our mental health.
Exactly. IPT helps you figure out and address any problems in your relationships that might be contributing to your anxiety or depression, like conflicts with people you care about, trouble setting boundaries, or feeling isolated and alone.
So it seems like therapy isn't just about what's going on in your head. It's also about understanding the stuff happening around you that might be affecting your emotions and how you feel overall.
That's right. Therapy takes a holistic approach, considering every part of your life and helping you find ways to create positive change across the board.
Wow, this is all making so much more sense now. It's not just about labeling yourself as anxious or depressed. It's about understanding the, like, little details of these conditions, how they can, you know, be connected, and the different ways you can heal and feel better. You know, as we're talking, it feels like, even though we're focusing on this one blog post about therapy, we're just scratching the surface of a much bigger conversation, you know?
Yeah.
There's so much more to talk about with anxiety and depression, like the things in society that contribute to these conditions and how we can, you know, build resilience and make the world a place that supports mental well-being for everybody. But before we jump into all that, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll keep talking about anxiety and depression, and we'll dig into some of the surprising things and practical tips this blog post has to offer. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. You know, it's funny how we always talk about, like, finding the right therapist.
Mm-hmm.
But what does that even mean? You know, that's a great point. I mean, it's not like picking, you know, a new coffee shop. There's a lot more at stake here. This blog post mentions how important it is to find a therapist who's, like, a good fit for you.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't really explain what that means.
Yeah, it's not just about, like, their credentials or what kind of therapy they do. It's about feeling comfortable enough to, you know, open up to them, trusting their advice, and feeling like they really get you.
So it's like any other relationship. You have to have a connection, right? You wouldn't hang out with a friend who doesn't make you feel heard or respected.
Right, exactly. And in therapy, that connection is super important. It's the foundation for everything else, you know? You need to feel safe and supported to really dive into those, like, deep emotional issues.
So how do you know if you've found the right therapist? Are there any, like, red flags to look out for?
Well, one red flag would be if you feel judged or dismissed by your therapist. You know, therapy should be a place where you feel accepted and understood no matter what you're going through.
That makes sense. You shouldn't feel like you have to, like, censor yourself or pretend you're okay.
Yeah. And another red flag is if it feels like your therapist is more interested in,
right,
pushing their own agenda than actually listening to your needs and goals. Therapy should be a collaboration, you know?
Yeah.
Both of you working together to come up with a plan that feels right for you.
Like a partnership, not a dictatorship.
Exactly. You should feel like you can share your thoughts and concerns. And your therapist should be open to feedback and willing to, you know, adjust the plan if needed.
And what if you just, like, don't feel like you're making any progress? Is that a sign you should find a different therapist?
It could be. Therapy takes time and effort, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's normal to have ups and downs along the way. But if you've been seeing a therapist for a while and you're not seeing any improvement, or if you just feel stuck, you know, it might be time to look at other options.
So it's not like failing to say, hey, this isn't working for me.
Mm-hmm.
You have the right to, you know, advocate for your own mental well-being.
Absolutely. You're the expert on your own experience, and you have the right to find the support that feels most helpful and beneficial for you.
Okay, that's really good to hear. But what about people who might not be ready for therapy, you know, or who can't access it for whatever reason? This blog post is all about therapy, but it does mention that there are other things you can do to help manage anxiety and depression.
Yeah, that's important to remember. Therapy is a great tool, but it's not the only tool, you know? There are lots of things you can do on your own to support your mental health, and even small changes can make a big difference.
Like what? Give us some examples.
Well, one of the simplest but most effective things you can do is make sure you're getting enough sleep.
Mm-hmm.
When you're sleep deprived, it's like your emotions are all over the place, and it's harder to deal with stress and anxiety.
Yeah, I've definitely noticed that when I'm exhausted. Even little things can feel overwhelming.
Exactly. But when you're well rested, you're more likely to feel calm and centered, and you're better equipped to handle whatever comes your way.
Okay, so sleep is super important. Got it. Mm-hmm. What else?
Another important thing is physical activity. You don't have to, you know, run a marathon. But even moderate exercise, like going for a walk or doing some yoga, can really improve your mood.
It's like they say, motion creates emotion.
Exactly. Exercise releases endorphins, which make you feel good. It can also help reduce stress, improve sleep, and just make you feel better overall.
So it's like a natural antidepressant.
Mm.
And it's free.
You got it. And don't forget about nutrition. What you eat can really affect how you feel. Eating lots of fruits, vegetables, and whole grains can give your body the nutrients it needs to function at its best. And that includes supporting your mental health.
So ditch the junk food and eat the good stuff. Makes sense.
And lastly, don't underestimate the power of connection. Spending time with loved ones, doing things you enjoy, and just taking breaks to relax and recharge can make a huge difference in managing anxiety and depression.
It's about prioritizing the things that, like, feed your soul and bring you joy, even when you're feeling down.
Exactly. It's about creating a life that supports your mental health, a life that's full of meaning, connection, and joy.
This whole conversation has been so eye-opening. It feels like we've gone beyond just understanding the differences between anxiety and depression. We've started to, like, explore those deeper levels and how they show up in our lives and in the world around us.
Mm-hmm.
But before we wrap up this deep dive, I want to go back to something you said earlier about the things in society that contribute to anxiety and depression. It feels like we can't really talk about these things without acknowledging the bigger picture. You know?
You're absolutely right. Anxiety and depression aren't just personal struggles. They're also reflections of the society we live in, you know, the pressures and expectations we face, the constant information overload, the economic uncertainties, the political divides, all of it. It can really weigh on our mental health.
It's like we're living in this pressure cooker of stress and anxiety. And it's no wonder so many people are struggling.
Exactly. And when we don't address those underlying societal issues, it's like we're putting a Band-Aid on a much deeper wound.
So what can we do about it? How can we change those societal norms and create a culture that supports mental well-being?
Well, it's a complicated issue, for sure. But I think it starts with awareness and open conversations, you know? We need to get rid of the stigma around mental health, create safe spaces where people can talk about their struggles without feeling ashamed or judged.
It's about normalizing those conversations, right?
Yeah.
Just like we talk about physical health, we wouldn't hesitate to tell someone we have a cold or a broken leg, but we often avoid talking about our mental health.
Exactly. And it's also about supporting policies and practices that prioritize mental well-being, you know? Right. Things like access to affordable health care, paid sick leave, flexible work arrangements, and a focus on work-life balance. Those things can make a big difference.
It's about creating a society that truly values and supports mental health. Not just in words, but in actions.
Absolutely. And it starts with each of us. We can make a difference in our own lives and in our communities by being open about our own struggles, offering support to those who are hurting, and advocating for change on a larger scale.
It's about recognizing that we're all in this together.
Right.
And that supporting each other's mental well-being benefits everyone.
Exactly. It's about creating a ripple effect of compassion and understanding that can spread throughout our communities and beyond.
You know, this deep dive has really shown me how interconnected anxiety, depression, and our society really are. It's not just about individual struggles. It's about creating a world that supports our collective well-being.
I agree. It's about shifting our perspective from me to we, you know, and recognizing that our individual mental health is deeply connected to the health of our communities and our society as a whole.
That's a really powerful and inspiring way to think about it. It gives me hope that we can create a better future. A world where mental well-being is a priority and something we celebrate. This has been such a thought-provoking deep dive. It feels like we've gone beyond just understanding the differences between anxiety and depression. We've explored those deeper layers of these conditions and how they impact our lives and the world we live in. As always, I want to thank you, our listeners, for joining us on this journey of discovery. We hope you've gained some valuable insights and maybe even a renewed sense of hope. Remember, taking care of your mental health is an act of courage and strength, and you don't have to do it alone. There are resources available, there are people who care, and there's always hope for a brighter future. Until next time, keep exploring, keep learning, and keep diving deep. So we've been talking about all these like big societal things, and it makes me think about, you know, the smaller everyday things we can do to help ourselves. This blog post mentions self-care, but what does that even look like in real life? Is it all, you know, bubble baths and fancy meditation retreats?
Well, those can be nice for sure. But self-care doesn't have to be like extravagant or expensive. It's really about making choices to prioritize your mental and emotional health, even in small ways.
Okay, so like, what are some of those small but mighty self-care things?
Think about what really, you know, recharges you. It could be spending time outside, listening to music, reading a book, or just connecting with people you love. It's about finding time for the activities that bring you joy and help you feel grounded.
So it's about like filling your cup back up so you have something to give.
Yeah.
And sometimes the simplest things are the best, right? Mm-hmm. Like just taking a few deep breaths when you feel stressed or, you know, logging off social media when it starts making you feel bad.
Exactly. Little moments of mindfulness can really make a difference. And another important part of self-care is setting boundaries. Learning to say no to things that drain your energy or don't fit with your values can be really empowering.
I know. That can be so hard, though. Especially like nowadays when everyone's so busy and trying to do everything. Mm. But it makes sense. If you're always saying yes to everyone else, you end up with nothing left for yourself.
Yeah. And that can lead to burnout, feeling resentful, and ultimately even more anxiety and depression. So learning to put your own needs first isn't selfish. It's essential for your well-being.
This has been such a, like, deep conversation. We've talked about the differences between anxiety and depression, how complicated their relationship is, the power of therapy, self-care, and even how society plays a role in shaping our mental health.
Mm-hmm.
As we wrap up this deep dive, I want to leave you with one last thing to think about. We've been talking about anxiety and depression like they're challenges, right? Like those unwanted house guests.
Mm.
But what if we changed how we see them?
Yeah, what if we saw them as chances to grow, you know? As like invitations to get to know ourselves better and to develop more compassion both for ourselves and for other people.
That's a really powerful way to look at it. It's not about pretending these struggles aren't real, but about approaching them with curiosity and a willingness to learn and grow from them.
Exactly. It's about recognizing that even when things feel dark, there's always a chance for healing and positive change.
That's such a hopeful and inspiring message. And it reminds me that even though this deep dive is ending, the conversation about mental health, about well-being, about creating a world that supports all of us, that conversation keeps going. So keep exploring, keep learning, keep connecting with each other, and keep diving deep. And remember, you're not alone. There is hope, there is help, and you deserve to thrive. Until next time.